science has delivered us vaccines that have eradicated contagious disease across the face of the earth. Science has delivered us a map of the human genome. Science has helped us put a human being on the surface of the moon and a rover on the surface of Mars. Science has delivered us technology that has helped us to build telescopes that enable the human eye to see other galaxies that are billions of light years away from where we live and move and breathe. And yet, science doesn't have a full understanding of laughter. Here's what we do know about laughter. Laughter is both primal and primary. Laughter emerges both on the timeline of development and in our own lives before language. Laughter is not relegated to humanity, but it extends across species and has particular purchase in mammals. Chimpanzees laugh. Gorillas laugh. Even rats laugh. In a lab, in experimentation, rats that were tickled by researchers, when tickled, emit a high-pitched screeching noise that is rat laughter. After rats are tickled and laugh, these laboratory rats seek out the researchers that tickled them. Laughter is not about comedic expression. Laughter is about connection. The brain chemistry of laughter is fascinating. When we laugh, our brains produce endorphins, oxytocin, and dopamine. These are the chemicals in the human experience that are associated with trust, affection, and well-being. If you were to put me in an fMRI machine right here in the aisle of this church, and you were to begin the scan, and somehow you could reach into that machine and tickle my ribs, and I were to laugh in that experience, you would see my brain light up. Laughter touches centers in our brains that are emotional, social, cognitive, and associated with motor. What we're meant to know from that is that laughter is a full-bodied experience. You don't just laugh with your brain or your heart or your gut. You laugh with your whole body. Psychologists tell us that those people who are struggling or suffering, those people who are able to maintain some connection to good humor during bouts of suffering and struggle, become more resilient, become less stressed. We know that laughter does not necessarily occur primarily in entertainment. You are 30 times more likely to laugh in the company of another human being than you are by yourself. When we laugh, we engage in a mysterious, cosmic, spiritual expression that we don't fully understand. We humans, before we are able to say, "I love you," or "I am with you," or "you belong," we laugh. It is one of the most beautiful expressions in the human experience. And you might not know it from the way that we conduct ourselves in church on a Sunday morning, because we tend to be sober, somber, and serious in church. But laughter sits at the very beginning of religious expression in the entirety, in the very beginning and all the way through the entirety of the Jewish Christian story. Now, in order to discover laughter hidden in plain sight, it requires a bit of explanation, particularly within the context of the story of the Bible. If you were around church last week, you heard this passage from the 12th chapter of Genesis. It's a conversation that exists between God and Abraham, and this conversation spreads out through the next nearly 10 chapters of Genesis. But if you were around, you might remember God putting Abraham on the move. God puts Abraham on the move with a promise. God says, "Look, here's the deal, Abraham. I am going to make your descendants more numerous than the stars in the winter sky in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. But there's a catch. You're going to have to leave this place that you know, this place that has been home to all of your predecessors, and move to a land that I have picked out for you." And so in between last Sunday's story in Genesis and this Sunday's story in Genesis, we have this particular progression where Abraham and his wife Sarah, along with other relatives and those who are in support of the family, move on. They leave that place that they call home. And when we get to this Sunday's story, they've found settlement in this place that is described at the base of the oaks of Mamre. What we're meant to hear is that they have left a particular place and they've made it to a spot in the desert, but not a spot in the desert that doesn't support life. Rather, they've made it to a spot in the desert that supports life so abundantly that an oak tree can grow there. And subsequently, God and Abraham have more conversations in this place, in this land of Cana that doesn't yet belong to Israel, but is promised in this agreement. God creates a strange covenant with Abraham that we still don't understand today. They will know you by the sign, and the sign will be circumcision? Circumcision. And then God reiterates that promise. God reiterates this promise to 99-year-old Abraham. Abraham, your descendants will be more numerous than the stars in the winter sky in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And Abraham does two things when he hears this again. The first thing that he does is he falls flat on his face. And the second thing that he does is he laughs. He laughs out loud. And then we have this beautiful story. This beautiful story. If you remember someone in this room right now, I know Anna Mae at very least, remembers Rublev's icon, this Russian icon depicting the Trinity. It's a tent and Abraham and Sarah, and then these three visitors. Rublev writes the story from Genesis in order to describe for us what the Trinity looks like. So Abraham and Sarah settled in this place under the oaks of Mamre, receive these three visitors. And in the story itself, there's energy there right away. Abraham and Sarah both know that these aren't just three passers-by. There's something to these three individuals. There's a feeling that they have. And so they go into hospitality overdrive. This was in the wheelhouse of my Southern mother. If it were my house rather than Abraham's and Sarah's tent, it would have been like the china and the silver and the linen and the crystal and 12 different kinds of forks and funny shaped spoons. I mean, they go into hospitality overdrive welcoming these three visitors. Won't you stay with us? Can't we give you some water? Can't we offer you something to drink? And then there's this other exchange, this exchange that happens again. And one of those three holy visitors, one of those angels, one of those prophets, one of those gurus says to Abraham, surely when we pass this way again next year, Sarah, your wife, will bear a son. Sarah overhears this conversation and she laughs. Now, there are two things that's happening in Sarah's laughter, right? It's two competing ideas are coming together. Abraham is 99. Sarah is 89. Those of us like me who have been through this experience know that infertility is no laughing matter. And so there is a sorrowful presence that is coming together with a holy possibility that ignites laughter in Sarah. If we read forward into the story, we know that the promise comes to be true. Sarah does become pregnant. Sarah does bear a child, a son. Now, this is one of the places where I just like, you know, full disclosure, this is my fault, our fault, preacher's faults. Like, we haven't told you what is hiding in plain sight about this story because we are so committed to being sober, somber, and serious in our religious expression. But Abraham and Sarah have a son. Do you remember his name? Isaac, right. So Sarah bears a son, Isaac. Now, this name Isaac, a name that is familiar to us across cultures, is a Hebrew name, Yitzhak. But both Yitzhak and Isaac is not, It's not a translation, it's a transliteration. So we get Isaac because it sounds to our English ear like Yitzhak. And you remember the name Yitzhak. Many of you probably remember Yitzhak Rabin, the premier of Israel. It's a common name. But what people like me don't tell you is that Sak, Yitzhak, Sak in the Hebrew means laughter. Yitzhak means he laughs. Abraham and Sarah have a son named Laughter. The very first star in the sky of all the descendants of Abraham, his name is Laughter. Laughter sits at the intersection in the relationship between God and humanity. Laughter. Wash your hands and come to dinner. Laughter. Clean your room. Laughter. Do your homework. That's what it sounded like in Abraham and Sarah's tent when they were raising their son. Now, some of you may be scratching your heads and wondering why I'm talking so much about laughter. If you have been around this church for the last year or so, you know we have had a year. Death, divorce, cancer, sorrow, more cancer, struggle. But we know that those people who are able to retain good humor during bouts of suffering and pain become far more resilient than most. I promised you this morning that we would engage in the big reveal, that we would talk about how we as a church intend to spend our summer together. So I am pleased to announce with a small measure of comedic fanfare that this summer's theme is come out and play. And I promised you that as we engaged in this theme, you would get a little token, something to walk away with, something to hang on to over the course of the summer so that you might be reminded of the importance of joy-making and frivolity and laughter when it comes to our religious, faithful, and spiritual expression. And so here we have for each of you a toy. There's some squeezable balls like the one in my hand. There are some bubbles and some jacks. And there are even some whoopee cushions in there. And here's what I can tell you. We're going to make some changes in this church this summer, and I know how that falls upon the ears and the hearts of the church. No religious congregation likes change, but we're going to change things nevertheless. So this summer, no coffee hour after church. What? No coffee hour? No, I mean to say there will be coffee after church, But we're not having coffee hour, we're having recess. You will see when you walk out of this church this morning that on that green space out there, there are not one, but there are two bounce houses. There is one bounce house for kids. And there is another bounce house for grown-ups. This summer at St. John's Episcopal Church, no Sunday school. Instead, all summer long, we'll have fun day school. In this church, this summer, no programs, no events, only playdates. This will be a banner summer where we have the opportunity to let go of our sober, somber, serious religious expression and have an opportunity to connect to something that is primal and primary, something that doesn't just help our well-being or help us engage in more flourishing in our lives, not something that makes our minds clearer or makes us less anxious, but something that connects the human heart to the author and creator of the universe, herself, himself. This is godly work that we have in front of us. And so we must surrender our tradition of sober, somber, and serious, and pick up a practice of play and good humor and laughter. I'll end with a story. One Sunday morning at church, the service ended, the organ came up, and the procession began to make their way back down the aisle. The service ended, the priest took his place at the door, greeting parishioners on the way out. As one parishioner came out, the priest looked that parishioner in the eye and asked, "So, what did you get from the sermon this Sunday morning?" The parishioner was a little taken aback by the inquisition of the priest, and she paused for a moment and reflected, and she said, "Well, I guess what I took away from the sermon was both a sense of the peace of God and the love of God." And the priest's eyes lit up and was like, "Oh, wow, great. Tell me more. Like, what did you learn about the peace of God and the love of God?" And she responded to him. She said, "Well, you know, your sermon seemed to surpass all understanding. And it also seemed to endure forever." Church, come out and play. Amen. Amen. I think there's some kids that...